Hello everyone and welcome to Words on a Wedding, the podcast that sees me, your host Annie Vischer, interview my wonderful guests about their big day. Together we talk all things proposals, planning, the ceremony, the reception, the honeymoon and beyond. No wedding related stone is left unturned. So whether you're planning your own wedding, you simply love wedding chat, or like me, you're a newlywed who just can't let it go, hit subscribe on Words on a Wedding, play on the episode and get stuck in. So my guest today is Deepa Bueller-Kosler, global fashion and beauty influencer. She has an astounding 1.9 million followers and counting, and beauty entrepreneur. She's the founder of Inda Wild, an award-winning beauty line rooted in Ayurveda. Thank you so much for joining me, Deepa. I've been looking forward to this for so long.
I'm so happy to be here, Annie, and see you again after so many months, or even has it been a year?
Maybe. I can't remember now. I mean, I know.
I think we met at the Queen's Jubilee.
Yes, and you were in the most incredible dress, true to form, but my goodness, that pink dress. Was that couture?
It was. And I think I didn't realize how cold London was going to be, you know, one of those days that it just starts raining out the blue. But no, I love that dress. It was made by an Indian couturer, so it was even more special.
Wow. So obviously, we're here to talk about your incredible, incredible, incredible wedding that I feel millions are already obsessed with. So let's wind right back and start how I always start. Who did you marry and how did you meet?
I married this man called Oleg Bueller, and I met my husband. Actually, it's almost like a Bollywood story, but he was the very first guy I met on the very first day of uni. And he was a student body president in the, like, we went to this university in the Netherlands, and he was in his final year. And the student body president who was organizing the introduction week for new students. And so I arrived at the kind of the main campus hall and got dropped off by my parents. And the very first person I see walking up to me is now my husband.
Oh, wow. And I've read somewhere that he thought you were being quite off with him, right? At the first time when you sat down.
So he then invited me into his office, and he's like, hey, you know, let me get you sorted, and I kind of put you in the right, you know, dorm or room or whatever. And because I didn't have any makeup on and I'd kind of just landed from India tired and jet lagged, I was very intimidated. And I'm like, oh my God, why is this hot guy talking to me? What am I meant to do now? Da, da, da. And so back then when I was intimidated, I'd put on this kind of bitchy mode and like bitchy face on. And so to answer to his politeness, he got a bit of bitchiness from my side, yeah.
And then how long was it before you kind of knew he was the one? When did you start dating after that, and how?
So I think from that initial meeting, there was definitely a spark. And he was in his final year, so he graduated soon after. But I remember in the 6 months that we kind of overlapped uni, every time we'd meet each other at dining hall or we'd meet each other at a certain room, there would be that instant like curiosity about each other, and there'd be a spark every time. We didn't really act on it because, mind you, I was 18 at the time and he was 21. That is a big difference in just age and kind of, you know, where you are in life. And he was raised in Amsterdam, born in the US. So like an Amsterdam boy meets a boarding school Indian girl, also age different. So we're very different people. So I'm also glad nothing really happened back then, because I don't think we were ready for each other. And then we would keep in touch on Facebook every year. And then many years later, a happy birthday message turned into a, hey, you know, if you're around, I would love to take you out on a meal. And then we met for the first time on our first date in July of 2015. And I think on that very first date, we both knew, like, it was instant that really? We were meant to be.
And then it wasn't sort of speaking relatively very long before the proposal, right, after that?
No. So 3 months after our first date, even though I was living in London and he was in Amsterdam and we were doing long distance, 3 months after our first date, he asked me to be his girlfriend officially. And then 3 months after that, I think it was New Year's Eve, he came up to my ear and whispered, when, you know, the fireworks go off, that this is the year I'm going to ask you to marry me. So I guess we knew very quickly, and he did ask me to marry him that year in this beautiful proposal, and he just planned it to perfection. It was almost like Prince Charming in this palace in India waiting for me to arrive, and it was unbelievable. I'm very proud of him for pulling that off. And then soon after we got married, yeah.
Wow. And you didn't know it was happening, right? You had no idea.
Not at all. It was an invitation from Vogue that said they have a Christmas dinner and that they'd love to invite me to this Christmas dinner that they're inviting very few exclusive people on. It's in this grand palace in India. And so I thought I was going attending an event. No idea that that entire thing was made up. And he even reached out to a person at Vogue to get their email address to send this email out. So it looked super legit. Yeah, I know. He went through a lot of,
oh my God,
lot of troubles to make sure I would not find out.
And then did you start planning your wedding straight away? And did you both have quite similar visions for how it was going to go?
So I think we did, soon after the proposal, start planning it because we're both, I guess, quite ambitious people in everything we do in life. We wanted to be quite well put together and all of that. But in the beginning, we were toying between should we have a Indian ceremony in India and then say a European ceremony in Europe and kind of split it up into two weddings. And then at one point we're like, okay, maybe India is just too far out. Like, should we just do a wedding in Europe, but then have Indian customs and traditions in there? And we'd gotten pretty far in planning that one until one evening when we had a dinner with friends and we were telling them, oh, we might have our wedding in Portugal or Spain. And they're like, what? No, no, no. We need to come to India. We want a big, fat Indian wedding. And we're like, wait, you guys really, you'll fly down? They're like, yeah. When else in our life would we experience a crazy Indian wedding in India? So then we shifted gears and started looking for locations in India and found the most magnificent location and through the process, like found everything else. But then indeed ended up doing it in India. And to your question of if we had similar visions or not, I think with Oleg, surprisingly, he really cares about more like the macro things. Like for him, it was important that people had a place to stay that was good, or like they had food and wine, you know, like the important thing. And for me, quite naturally, I suppose, I ended up focusing on the logo of our fonts, of our menu, or what are going to be the gifts in everybody's rooms, or you know, like what are the outfits that the bridesmaids are going to wear? And so like the really micro things, and he focused on the more macro things. And together, I think we ended up being a really perfect team and organizing it together.
Because how do you, your wedding was across 4 days. And so presumably once you hit on the venue, then that kind of denoted a lot of what was going to happen that fed through to your plans. So talk me through the venue. How did you choose that venue?
So the person that helped my husband with the proposal, she was kind of a wedding planner as well. So when we were down for the proposal already, we were like, hey, we have a few days to kill now. Let's go around and look at what venues are there in Rajasthan, because Rajasthan is just a region of India that has the most beautiful palaces and most beautiful, beautiful kind of venues. So we're like, you know what? I think we should just get married here as well. So we went around, looked at a lot of different palaces. And for us, what was really, really important was that everyone stays together. That was one thing that we found important, that instead of people living in seven different hotels and coming into different venues, we're like, let's make this into a 4-day almost school trip or like family trip where everyone lives together. We do all our activities there and we kind of take over the entire hotel, and that there's no other guests. There's nothing. It's just our utopia for 4 days. And so being very clear about that, it was very easy because we wanted our guest list to be around 100. We needed a property with between 50 to 60 bedrooms. We needed it to have enough locations for all our different activities and kind of events. And so the list became very fine-tuned already. It's like, okay, then you guys have between 6 palaces to look at. So we went and looked at all the 6 palaces. And finally, there was this one that we both arrived on and at the same time looked at the view and looked at the place and we're like, this is it. And then started putting in our prices and kind of negotiations and dates with the hotel.
Wow. And then mentioned before across 4 days, but you planned a different theme for each day. Right. So talk me through those 4 days and the
what happened across your wedding?
Yeah, so the beauty again of doing what we decided was to do the Indian wedding as well as the European wedding to give respect to both our cultures. And so an Indian wedding usually can go on anywhere between 3 days to a month. So it was a lot of different things that we had to fit in there. So the first 3 days were essentially the Indian wedding. And then the fourth day was the European wedding. And the first day of the Indian wedding was a lot of welcoming guests, kind of the welcome reception. And there was this thing called the Sangeet, which essentially means dance and music. And so there were, you know, dances that the boys had learned and dances that the girls had learned. So it was kind of like a boy versus girl, bride's party versus groom's party dance off night. And that's very common in Indian weddings to kind of like get the competitive spirit going and get the like booze flowing and all that good stuff.
It's such a beautiful spectacle as well.
Exactly, exactly. It was really all about that. And the second day was more about the beautiful traditions of kind of saying goodbye to your families and going from, you know, a girl to a woman, and like a lot of beautiful rituals crafted around that with your family members blessing you and like his family members blessing him and everybody kind of giving you best wishes for the new life. And it's really beautifully emotional kind of ceremonies as well, crafted around that. And there's another one called the Haldi, which is where they take turmeric and another yellow kind of powder that's called chandan. And what they do is they kind of rub it all over your body. I don't know if you've seen those photos where we're like fully yellow in color, but they rub it all over your body to kind of give you the wedding glow, they say. So it's very kind of pre-wedding ritual of getting the bride and the groom ready. And it's always quite fun because your friends get to like throw yellow stuff all over you and people love that. So we did that on the second day. And then the third day was the Indian wedding, the official wedding around a fire where, you know, you walk around seven times and give yourself basically seven vows with your parents present, with your best friends present and your guests present. So that was really beautiful. And then we had the first evening of speeches, because we had so many people to give speeches that we had to split it up. So the reception of the Indian wedding became the first night of speeches. And then the fourth day was the European wedding, after which it was the European wedding reception with the speeches and the dinner and everything. So that's how we split it up.
And I read that for the Indian wedding, your skirt alone weighed 44 pounds.
Right? Yeah, my dresses are like a thing of their own. Every single dress that I wore was like perfectly crafted by the designer and with a theme, a thought in mind. And the wedding dress itself, I think, is a masterpiece. It was done by the most famous wedding designer of the country called Sabyasachi. He like is literally epitomous with like weddings and the wedding culture in the country. And he makes the most beautiful bridal wear with like craftsmanship and everything. So indeed, my skirt was very heavy because it had real gold thread through everything. And it took like artisans to work on it for, I don't know, I think like 17,000 hours. I mean, don't quote me on that exact number, but a very long time. And everything was handmade and like with the true craftsmanship of where it comes from. And it was unbelievable. It was such a beautiful dress. But also the European wedding dress I wore was created by this Lebanese designer called Ashi Studio. And that dress as well was unbelievable. Like it was another dress that was handcrafted and a lot of embroidery done. But this time the Lebanese designer took ode to India. So he put in a lot of Indian motifs and kind of the colors inspired by India. And so even my European wedding dress, like both of them, I can't believe I wore them, honestly. They're both such masterpieces that belong in like the, you know, Metropolitan Museum or something. They're stunning.
They definitely do. And was there any think work about those designers, or did you always know they would be the ones?
I think for the Indian one, I always knew. I had a vision of how I wanted it to be. And so it was actually the designer had to go into his archive from like 10 years ago and find a sample and a design that was similar to my vision and bring it out because it wasn't in his current season. So he had to really, really custom make it from many years ago. But that one I was very clear on. So we worked together on it. And then for the European one, I remember meeting with Ashi in Paris for the first time. And it was really his vision and mine together. Like, he first proposed a dress that looked like this. And then together we worked on it for, I think, 8 months it took for that dress. Like, I had fittings multiple times in London, with each layer of the dress being completed, another fitting, until the final dress that, you know, I flew with me to India. It was like the box of the dress was almost like I was carrying a fridge to India. Like, the customs people were like, "What is in this box?" I'm like, no, it's just a wedding. And they're like, "How much is this dress worth?" I'm like, "It's worth nothing because it's like a present." They're like, "Okay," because they were going to charge me taxes on it or something. But it worked out.
I love that you went through the airport and said, "No, it's worth nothing. Totally worthless. Don't worry about it.
It's just a present, you know, it's just something, a sample. We'll return it." They're like, "Okay."
And then, of course, with all those looks and outfits, you must have had to sit down and kind of plan what your hair was going to look like, what your makeup was going to look like. And you're part of the industry. So who did you select to be in charge of your hair and your makeup? And what was your brief?
I was very lucky again here to have the Estee Lauder companies, you know, do a partnership with, especially MAC. So I had my hair, actually my hair was by Aveda, and my like makeup was by MAC and skincare by Clinique. And Aveda sent Amir, who is a phenomenal South Asian hairdresser. And he, you know, since then we're such good friends now as well, but he is a hair magician. Like, he could literally pull hairstyles in 10 minutes flat. Because some days I would have four events with four different hairdos, and I'd come into the chair and be like, "Amir, you have 10 minutes. And he's like, "Okay, here we go." And like, just quickly create something that till today I see all over wedding magazines and Pinterest as like wedding hair inspiration, even 3-4 years later, because what he created were unbelievable. And the amount of time, you know, that he had to create them even more showcases how absolutely incredibly creative and fantastic he is. And my makeup was done by Nisha, who's also a phenomenal woman. But it was, you know, just we went for, before it was a trend, we went for the minimalistic makeup. Because back then, Indian brides were very used to like caking their face and baking their face and da 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 da. Like, it was so much. But I was always a fan of less is more. And so Nisha did that to perfection, where the makeup looks are very just glowy, airy, flowy, except for maybe changing the lip color and making them bold here and there. The rest, like right now, it's all about the clean girl aesthetic and the dewy skin and the Hailey Bieber look. But back then it was quite a pioneer move to be like, "I'm going to do the less is more angle." I think, yeah, I really loved working with them so much.
Mm. And I think whether an Indian wedding or a European wedding, there is such often a cut and paste formula for the makeup that it's always quite a bold move to do your own thing and say, "No, actually, this isn't how I feel great every day. This is what makes me feel great. So let's do that."
Absolutely. And also for me, the main thing what I realized was that I wanted to look like me, but just slightly, you know, the best version of me. Like, sometimes what makeup has the power to do is make you look different. And you can put like layers and layers of foundations and eyelashes and everything. And then your husband is literally like sitting across from you and being like, "Is this my wife? Like, she doesn't really look like her." And so for me, it was very important for my skin to breathe and for me to be me, you know, like the person that he knows, the person that my friends know, and not to really for that one day, for the sake of photos, change how I look completely.
Yes, exactly. And it's all to do with comfort as well. And, you know, not being conscious of something that's on your face that isn't normally there. And whether, you know, those full on lashes or even the feeling you get when you've baked and baked and baked. And did you pull that through to your outfit choices as well? Like, everything was very you, and you took, you know, part tradition, but very much made it to your own.
So when it comes to outfits, it was the opposite of minimalistic. Because I also like, really like, it's like my identity, you know, putting on what you do. So with the outfits, indeed, they were more maximalistic, and everything was craftsmanship and beautiful garments and velvets and fabrics. And it was incredible. And every single outfit I wore, I'm so, so happy with how it turned out and how the designers made it work. And And I'll be honest, it was a lot of planning. Like, I think just the outfit, sometimes my husband would literally be like, are you joking? We don't have wine for our guests and you're focusing on all your 7 outfits. I'm like, babe, it's important. But it was quite a task to get them all to look how they did and really work together with all these designers.
And where do you keep them now?
I think also I was very lucky with was I had kind of a little bit of foresight with these things where I realized as incredible as these outfits are and these moments are, you would need storage space for the rest of your life to keep them. And I think as an influencer, the beauty is you can really talk with the designers and be like, you know what? Let's be sustainable. I don't need to keep them for life. Like some of them did gift me the outfits and be like, please keep it. Like we really want you to keep it. But others respected my choice of please take it back and either keep it in your showroom or give it to somebody else or sell it because especially the two main ones, the Indian wedding one and the European, they're massive. Like the amount of storage space I would have for the next 6 or 7 decades is, and even probably when my daughter or, you know, our children are grown up, they're going to be like, mom, I don't think I like that style. I probably want my own style and my own identity. So I was very lucky that we could do that. And now I do see this like movement in the wedding industry about renting and sustainability. And I think I am all for it. Like, I also understand the beauty of keeping your wedding dress and like having it there, especially if it's, I guess, quite lightweight and not too heavy. I would be like, let's do it. But I'm also completely open to people being like, you know, I'll wear the most extravagant dress, make my memories and my moments in it, and then give it back so perhaps the next person can enjoy it as well.
Yeah. And you had very much that mindset when it came to planning the rest of the wedding, right? So I remember I read that your flowers, a lot of them you sourced locally.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Absolutely. So the majority of our flowers, we were leaving the airport and I remember going to the palace. There were these flower vendors on the corners of the road, like the local businesses and like older women that would just kind of make garlands and flowers. And I stopped the car and just told my wedding decorator, I'm like, we're going to use her flowers. And then we kind of like bought all of hers and her friends and like just small businesses that were in the corner of the street, you know, selling flowers instead of going the route of giving the biggest flower industries even more. I was like, let's support them. And we used them. And then also with the flowers, we did repurpose them like with every event because they don't get spoiled after one evening. We would use them for the event the next morning as well, but in a different way, you know, and like really repurpose it and really showcase sustainability through everything instead of wasting the flowers and just chucking them away the next day.
And they looked so beautiful throughout sort of every picture I've seen. Absolutely stunning. And you centered your whole wedding, right? How did you scent your wedding?
That was a dream collaboration by Jo Malone. They sent across so many candles and they scented like we also custom created like a wedding scent with the jasmine sambac and the wood sage sea salt, like a combo. And the entire wedding, like from the garlands to the napkins to like, you know, diffusers, like everywhere people went in that palace for the 4 days was just scented by this unique smell that we created of giving them that memory of what the wedding was. And then to our bridesmaids and groomsmen, we also gifted them those very fragrances to take home to remember, you know, more than just photos, also remember the wedding through the beauty of scent and the memory that that brings back. So I thought that was, that was really, really, really beautifully done by the decorators and the planners, how they scented everything.
It was such a gorgeous idea and such a lovely idea to send them back with that scent because it makes it so sensorial. And like you said, it's scent is so much linked to memory. And I imagine just a spritz of those two together brings the whole four days back.
It, like flooding back.
Amazing.
All of it, yeah.
And what are your fondest memories now of that time looking back?
Fondest memories. I think both the moments of walking down to my husband were so very special. I remember, especially for the European one, as a little girl, you know, you watch those romantic movies and you envision that one day you're going to do that, and how is it going to be? And months leading up to the wedding, I'd always notice myself as like this graceful woman in this dress walking up down the aisle to my husband. And then when it actually happened, and I was actually there and I looked up to him under my veil for a second, I just started crying. It was just like tears and tears of like joy and emotion. And both my parents were walking me down the aisle. And I remember the guests like around, every single one of them started crying as well. Because it was just this moment of so much purity and love and, you know, like two lovers connecting. Like I can even fall into tears right now by thinking about that moment. But it was just so beautiful and so pure that just the emotion of happy tears came out. And then my husband started crying. And it was just like this moment that also in a way connected not just him and I, but like all the witnesses. It was like we all had this moment together of seeing what true love feels like. And the only person that was angry was my photographer, because she's like, honey, I need happy photos down the aisle, not tears. But it was just so pure and raw. And I think that was probably the big stand-up moment of the entire wedding for me.
And do you think that also had something to do? Because I do think that the rituals you talked me through leave so much space for emotion. And a lot of that emotion that you don't actually, isn't made space for in European weddings. Do you think that really made it so much more, that much more monumental emotionally?
Absolutely. I think also Indian weddings are so deep on emotion, obviously. But the beauty of European weddings is the speeches. Like Indian weddings don't usually have speeches. It's more gathering and talking. But the combination of incredible speeches by your friends and family, the emotional angle of, you know, the bringing together of the universe, the vibrations, frequency, family, ancestors, like they coming together, combined with the fact that we all lived together for 4 days in this like utopic world, it just felt like we were in our own little bubble. And I think the combination of all of them created this supernova of emotions and like just bonding and love between Oleg and I, of course, but also everybody around us. And I think that's what made the wedding very special.
And I read again that you didn't plan to have a first dance, but it happened anyway, right?
Yeah, exactly. We were both like, oh, that's so cheesy. Let's not do that. But then my sister-in-law, my brother's wife, it was her time to give a speech. And so she's like, I'm not very good at speeching, but I do like singing. So I'm going to invite you both to go in front. And then she sang a beautiful song. And she was like, and you have to do your first dance now. So she kind of just put us in the spot and just started singing. And she is a phenomenal singer. And so under the stars, like at our wedding dinner, we performed our first dance.
Wow. What was the song?
It's A Hero by Mariah Carey.
So that must have been such a beautiful moment. And in when you'd had, you know, 4 days of everybody being there, you must have felt it like it was just you two at that point.
100%, 100%. Also, what was really, really beautiful was that evening, the speeches were, again, like just everybody felt so intertwined. Like my mother was talking, it almost felt like everyone's mother was talking, you know? And I even remember friends telling me the next day that after your mom's speech, we all texted our moms being like, Mom, I love you. I love you so much. Thank you for everything. And like when my sister gave the speech, you know, people felt like their sister was giving a speech. And it was really, really beautiful. It was a very special evening.
Gosh. And then, you know, I think you come away from an incredible wedding like that with so much experience. What advice would you have to a friend who was planning their own wedding? What top tips would you give them at this point?
Oh, definitely, if you can have people stay over a night, if even a night, but the more the better, obviously, but at least because it, you know, just coming for the occasion and having dinner and leaving is not the same as everybody's being there the whole night together and then the next morning as well and kind of like, you know, talking about all those things. So that one is very, very special to make a wedding quite magical. Then I think the whole sustainability thing about like, don't put so much pressure on yourself for having to spend 10,000 on a dress or 15,000 on a dress. Like, as important and beautiful as a dress is, it is those memories and moments. Like, rather spend, you know, 2,000 on renting the most incredible dress and 8,000 on, you know, gifting your friends an even better wine or the best meal that they've ever had, or, you know, something more useful. And because the harsh truth is the dress is going to be in storage way more than it is going to be useful for anything else. So take what you can from the dress, make the memories, get the videos, get the photos, and then, you know, rather be sustainable about it. I think that would be a tip that really resonated with me, at least. And then lastly, yeah, okay, a really nice tip is for the women that tend to perhaps think that they might become bridezillas, have a friend or a family member that's very close to you and appoint them as the mood maester. And what they're basically, their main job is to make sure that you are happy and you're taken care of, and that they give you pep talks and they kind of are just there for you to make sure your mood is on high spirits. And already you appointing them, you know, is telling yourself that, okay, when this person comes to me and says, I need to snap out of it now, that this is just trivial, I need to listen to them. And that worked like a charm, honestly. I had my best friend Salome, she was my mood maester. And every time I'd get overwhelmed or anything like that, she'd be there to just be like, be positive. This is the positivity hat. Let's be positive. And it worked really, really well.
That's such a great tip. I've never heard that before, but that is golden advice. That's brilliant. And now at the end of each episode, we move on to listeners' questions. So I have a couple, especially for you. The first one is, what should you keep in mind when looking to book your dream Indian wedding venue? What are the key markers?
I think first you need to be very clear about what you want. Like I said, being clear about how many even rooms we wanted and what were the most important things. Like, have a checklist in mind. And if it, you know, checks all of that off, then that's already a great bonus. Visit it if possible, because you really need to feel like, I'm an energy person. And for me, a place's energy is very important as well. So if you go visit it, then you can really feel it and see it. And then thirdly, I'd say, try to see if the hotel manager is a good person, because they're the ones you're going to have to deal with for a big chunk of your wedding. Ours was not the best. And it was such a nuisance. It was like fighting against the wave constantly. And so making sure that it's a good manager that you have a good relationship with that can really treat you well is so, so, so paramount. So I would say that one as well.
Those are all great tips. And, you know, you're sort of, as I said, in the industry, you have this expertise. What tips do you have for somebody who's planning a variety of different hair and makeup looks across a few days for a wedding?
I think the mistake perhaps I made was sometimes having too many different events in a day and switching up hair and makeup too many times instead of spending that time with friends and family. So I'd say if you have multiple events a day, try to make the changes as minimal as possible. So in the most precious hours of your wedding, you're not sitting in a hair and makeup chair, but instead actually enjoying your wedding. And apart from that, I think when it comes to dresses, yeah, definitely plan in advance and make sure, you know, you consider everything from the weather, humidity, like how heavy it is, and make sure you know what you're getting yourself into. So when you're planning your weddings and dresses, not just about the photos, but about you having to actually wear them and how comfortable they are as well. So
I meant to ask, actually, did you have any kind of beauty regimen in the lead up to your wedding? What did you book in for any treatments?
Yes,
like that?
I did, actually. So I really started taking supplements for skin, especially with gut. I went into like a very good like gut detox and kind of gut health thing. I also took collagen supplements, like marine collagen for your skin. And then when it comes to skincare itself, obviously I have a skincare brand now, but I've always been very much into ingredients heavy. So I did vitamin C, I did a lot of SPF, I did, you know, retinol in the evening. I used to do a lot of kind of skin slugging, like extra moisturizing stuff, all of that, plus combined with a monthly microneedling or kind of hydrafacial thing at the esthetician. So microneedling is great for like collagen pumping. And also having a great fitness routine, you know, just make sure you're always feeling great and your skin's glowy. So those were the few things I really incorporated for, I think, almost 10 months before the wedding.
Right. A very, very well thought out routine, I have to say.
Sure. And thing is, I do most of those things today as well. So they were something that I started off for the wedding, but I continue till today. They just became a habit. Obviously, I can do facials every month. I end up doing them now once in 3 months. But, you know, good tips to have for life as well.
Definitely, definitely. Do you have any top recommendations for supplements? Because I feel like that's an area that people want to get stuck into, but it's so overwhelming.
Yeah, absolutely. I think similarly with skincare and supplements, like all those industries have so much going on. What for me right now I do that works amazing is, do you know Athletic Greens? There's this brand called Athletic Greens, and they have a powder called AG1. What they've done is basically put 75 different supplements and nutrients and minerals into one. So you don't have to worry about anything else. If you just take that once a day, you're good. And then say if you want a bonus on just hair or just skin, you can add like just a hair supplement then on top of it as a bonus. But with AG1, you've got the basics of probiotics, prebiotics, like your turmeric, your zinc, your vitamins, everything. And then I take the Vita Glow Marine Collagen, because the founder, Anna Leahy, is a friend as well. And I very much believe in her and her brand. So it's that marine collagen along with the AG1 and you're good to go.
Beautiful. And of course, Indoworld Skincare, I'm a huge, huge fan. It's beautiful, especially if you're giving, I love giving myself a face massage at home, and beautiful.
The PM serum is perfect for that. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for joining me, Deepa. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk through your incredible wedding, in your own words, your big fat Indian wedding. And for those who need visuals, obviously, these will all go on the Instagram page, because these outfits, this hair, the makeup, it all needs to be seen to be believed. It's absolutely stunning.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for listening to Words on a Wedding. If you like the episode, please subscribe if you haven't already, and follow at Words on a Wedding on Instagram, where you'll find guest wedding photos and much, much more. Have a great week.